Hello, everyone. This is Chuck Fry, publisher and author of the Mind Mapping Software blog, and I'm really pleased to be talking to the author of an intriguing new book called MoboBrain by Jens Johnson. That's a guide to turning your smartphone and your other mobile devices into a portable brain, one that you can fill with notes, ideas, clippings, and your own personal maps. It's a good primer for visual thinking, where maps form a quick guide to everything from your personal goals to managing what you really need to discuss with your boss in your next meeting. And what I like about this book is that sketching and mapping is so central to Jens' philosophy, which he explains and demonstrates in the book in a very engaging way. And I also am very pleased with the idea of using a tool that you already have to increase your brain power. I'm all about that, considering my focus on innovation and creativity. And I really gained some great insights into some new ways of doing things by reading the book. And I think you're going to really enjoy MoboBrain when it becomes available during the first week of March. Just a little bit about Jens before we get started. He's the editor of Going Mobo, which is an online and print magazine devoted to the new mobile lifestyle. And he founded that in 2010, and he has a growing following on Twitter and is on his companion website, goingmobo.com. And I'm excited to learn more about the thinking behind MoboBrain, this great book. Welcome, Jens.
Well, thank you very much, Chuck.
Let's start off by talking about a concept that you talk about on your blog and in your book, the whole idea of digital nomads. What does that term mean in the context of what we're trying to do today?
Well, digital nomads is actually much how we in our society have gravitated towards. It really describes someone who is not necessarily hooked always or connected always to their home or their office. They're many times doing work on the road. They're many times traveling as part of business and are more or less disconnected from a geography. And a good portion of our lives on a daily basis, whether we realize it or not, we're actually nomads. We're in the typical a notion of being hunter-gatherers, we're out there hunting and gathering information. We may not be hunting our next meal per se with spears, but we are hunting that next meal maybe on Yelp or Urban Spoon or something like that. So a digital nomad really is our mobile generation. We're really enabled by our mobile technology, and we're not really tied down to a geography per se. And our phones can actually influence events much more so than we really understand. In fact, the whole concept of digital nomad actually dates back to the late 90s. There's a book by a Japanese author, Tsukio Makimoto, and David Manners, in which they talk about how things have become more and more mobile. And this was back in the 90s. Predates a lot of our modern conveniences. So we really have become more pneumatic in some of our behaviors. And, of course, I like the term mobile bohemian. But the same idea is that we are digitally connected to the world these days and operate in that fashion.
Jens, you founded Going Mobo, your e-zine, in 2010. What was your goal behind creating that, and how has that evolved over the last 3 years?
Well, I realized with my own, the way I interacted with my phone and my tablet at the time, that my lifestyle had really begun to change, and change in a good way. And so I thought I would try to focus on that because I didn't see as many websites or magazines really looking at this mobile lifestyle. And by that, I was really after focusing on the types of food we encounter as mobos. The traveling has become part of our lifestyles, the art we see along the way, just different styles of living. When we're empowered by our digital technology. So the magazine Going Mobo and the web companion website Going Mobo really do focus on this and try to explore different people's experiences in our mobile world.
Okay, and then what made you decide to write Mobile Brain, and how does that extend your thinking beyond what our listeners could find on your blog or in your e-zine?
Well, it actually delves into the subject of using our mobile devices, for example, our smartphones, our iPads, our e-readers, our laptops, everything that is mobile with us, in a more in-depth way. I wanted to, I know when I was at dinners or with friends, and let's say we were looking around for a place to eat or a place to go, we'd pull out our phones and we would be very active in trying to find that information. And then I also realized that when we were sitting around at a coffee shop or having dinner or a meal together and we engage in conversation, many times we check our facts out on the internet. We'd pull out our phones again and we'd refer back to them for facts or factoids. And so more and more we were beginning to use, and I was beginning to use my phone in that way. But I thought that the whole trend was that more and more of our mobile devices could be used to help us understand the world around us, to help us recall facts and conversations, to remember important things that we read. And so the whole concept of a mobile brain was something I wanted to explore in a lot more depth. And so that really got me started thinking about it. And I realized a good place to explore that was with the friends and acquaintances I had that actually were using it to a large degree in their own lives. And so I've kind of followed them around, and many times we sat together and used our devices in that fashion to really explore the techniques and the technology and some of the etiquette involved in using our mobile devices as our second brains, kind of our portal brains, if you will.
You mentioned following your friends around. That's something that's woven throughout the book, these a kind of a narrative that follows these characters through different experiences where they're utilizing the tools. And in my mind, that really brings the content of the book to life and takes it beyond the realm of the typical how-to technology books. So you're saying then that these weren't people that you made up for the book, but these are your friends that you followed around and shared your experiences of using these tools with them?
In most cases, they are. They're acquaintances or friends that have had certain episodes in their life that they've run into, say, obstacles or roadblocks. Some of the characters are actually composite characters, or I've actually put one or two friends or acquaintances together. But to a large degree, the events that they talk about are real events that have happened. In fact, one of my friends had gotten a pink slip that she had lost her job as a librarian and didn't really know the next steps, didn't really know what she wanted to do. And, you know, in situations like that, you sit down with friends and you talk about things. And we actually went to a local diner that we both like, and I pulled out my iPad at the time. And we actually used it to sketch out a map of, to actually brainstorm what she really would like to do with her life as her next career. And that really kind of opened up a lot of opportunities. And I thought it was very valuable to step back through all of that process with my readers so they can actually see how it's done, where it works and how it works. And I think that's valuable because it's not simply the techniques that I wanted to communicate. It was a lot of the effects and the emotions that are involved in working through a problem and working through it in this way in a visual fashion.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, those narratives as I read through them were pretty empowering to see how somebody was actually using this and the difference it made for them, and the feeling of confidence that they had.
Yeah, and I think we many times will prevent ourselves from bringing out a phone or a mobile device in a social situation. And I think, of course, we always have to be courteous and understand those social situations, but you'll see more and more, especially with people I know of all ages and across all different types of occupations, they easily bring out their phones and use it to inform conversations. And so I think more and more you'll see that people can have their own personal roadmaps handy. They can have notes that they've taken on conversations or meetings or books or articles. And all those can be right at hand and referred to in important situations. For example, talking with the boss or talking with friends about an important topic. And I think that's very empowering. And when people have that at hand, they don't have to rely always on their gray matter, since sometimes that doesn't always remember the fine detail. But then they have this mobile device which can augment their conversations and augment their memory in many cases.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the whole concept of the personal maps and the illustrations that you included into the book of those. Can you explain to our listeners what a personal map is in general and how a person would use it?
Well, a personal map is I guess the comparison is a Google map that we might use or an Apple map that we might use. When we're trying to find a place, a restaurant or a store or a person's address, we'll pull out our phones, we'll type in the address, and the phone will pull up or display a map for us. And, of course, we can always see a little line drawn from where we are to our destination. And so we are used to using our phones in that fashion. A personal map, personal roadmap, is a way a person can do the same thing except with different topics. I mentioned my friend who got a pink slip. A personal map can be something that you draw that just helps break apart a problem for you, helps you to do some problem solving. And so the problem can be, say, central inside of a screen. And by taking your stylus or even your finger and drawing lines and trying to break apart your problem or brainstorm your problem, it's a great way of getting your thought processes going. And then many times once you have an idea of where you're heading, you'll need some of the small steps and stops along the way to help guide you. And a personal map is just that. So, for example, I many times on a weekend, since I only got 2 days, I will many times draw out a little personal timeline, which is, for me, a map, in which I can plot out certain things I really want to get done over the weekend before the whole weekend runs out. And I can actually plot that, if you will, or draw it out. And I'll put pictures in there because, for me, that communicates very, very quickly what I want to do. So if I want to get out on my bike, I'll draw bike riding in a certain morning or afternoon and the like. So the concept of personal maps is really, instead of using, say, a location map like a Google map or an Apple map, you draw your own. You draw your own map, and then you bring it up on your phone or another mobile device, and it helps guide you to your destination. And I think it's very valuable, and it keeps me on track and helps me to make sure I accomplish all the details or all the things I want to do many times. So it's a great way of planning. It's a great way of problem solving, and it's just a great way of recalling everything you need to do in one location, just one map.
And it sounds like you prefer to do this in drawings and images as opposed to something that's more text-based, correct?
Yeah, I actually find myself mixing the two. But I think visually, I tend to be more of a visual person myself, and I think many of us are. And so I will draw symbols or figures that I can comprehend by glancing at it on my screen. So for me, drawing things, I don't know, I guess I always have been drawing and doodling of sorts. And so it's really, for me, a very easy way to express an idea kind of quickly. And it's also on the opposite end of it, when I'm reading a map or reading or something that I've written, the images all jump out at me, and I can understand them very quickly. I don't have to sit down and read things in the text, per se. So I do like incorporating sketches and images in my notes and in my maps.
Well, I like the fact that your personal roadmap, too, is very free-flowing. It's not so much like a mind map where you have a central topic with everything flowing out from it, but you can actually use it as almost like a process map that winds around the screen so you know what you have to do first and next and after that.
There's so many different ways to draw maps, and mind maps are a great way. I haven't used them as much myself, but they're a great way to put down a central idea and then just see the whole topic fold into the different components. And when you use colors and sketches and annotate it, it's just a really nice way of breaking apart a topic or a subject. But it's just one of many different structures you can put onto a map. You can have a sequential map where you start in one place and arrows go from box to box to box, almost like a road map. You certainly can have a hierarchy where you break apart a topic. I many times, if I'm trying to make a decision, I'll have a pro and con map. It's almost like having a line right straight down the middle, and on one side I put everything positive about doing something, and on the other side I put everything negative about doing something. And so it takes a lot of different forms, and, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg is putting a very simple map together. You really can go in many different directions with it.
I love the fact that you included some templates with the book, and the whole concept of using those with an app, say on an iPad, that supports layers in drawings, where that template becomes the bottom layer, and you use it as kind of a rough guideline or blueprint for creating your own map, and then you can hide that bottom layer. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Well, thanks, Chuck. It really helps me to space out my drawing on a page. And there's so many different apps these days that incorporate layers on them that you can put onto an Android tablet or onto your Apple iPad. Many different smartphones have them built in. And I go through a number of those different vendors that supply them. But it's a great way to draw, put a template on the bottom, draw your first layer, draw a second layer, and just kind of build up your maps. And it keeps you organized and keeps everything visually very well spaced on the screen.
Great idea. You seem to be a big advocate of storing everything in a cloud-based service like a Dropbox or Box.net or Evernote. Why is that important to mobile bohemians?
Well, I think putting things up on the cloud is a big step in pulling together your different notes and facts and thoughts from your different devices. For example, I like to read my e-books on a couple of different mobile devices. I have a Nook. I have an iPad. I certainly read on my phone. And I can put my books across all of them. So same book, I can open up on one and then open up on another to the same page. A lot of the e-readers have that kind of a service, and that's great. But when I take notes about my books and I'm on different devices, I don't want to have to, if I want to find a quote that I especially like, I don't want to have to drive back home, get my Nook, open up to the page, and take a look at it there. I want to actually have it on my phone when I need it. So what I advise, and one of the central steps in putting a mobile brain together, is to sign up for one of the many cloud services that are out there. They're free. You can get for anywhere from 2 to 5 to 25 gigabytes worth of storage and store everything in one spot, and that is on the cloud. And once it's up there, you can begin building your putting all your notes together, on the same in the same area. You can build what I call a knowledge base. So as you're interested in a particular topic, whatever that might be, everything you read and come in contact with can be stored in one central spot, and that spot is the cloud. And, of course, there's many different services out there. You'll see the iCloud that Apple provides. Evernote is a great service that's out there. Dropbox crosses so many different platforms. It's a wonderful service to use. And you're not stuck using one service. You can sign up for as many as you'd like, and there's actually no charge for the starter versions. And these starter versions, again, are can range from 2 to 25 gigabytes worth of storage, which is great.
I'm right there with you on that whole strategy because I do well, I've got a full-time job being a marketing manager for a small company, so I've got a laptop at work that I use, and then I have several devices at home, including a desktop PC, a laptop, an iPhone, and two iPads. And I may be working on any of those devices at any given time, and I love having all my stuff with me, and it's all up to date, and I can access it wherever I am and just continue moving these projects forward in my spare time. In fact, I wrote my last ebook entirely on Evernote, utilizing a drag-and-dictate app to dictate the key points that I wanted to make in the book, and it worked really well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I really do think it's a growing trend and a real advantage for everyone to have some sort of a central cloud service that they can use. And so I think also the other side of it too is that as you are investigating a topic, you can type in that topic. Let's say you're just looking for something on visual thinking. You can type in the topic visual thinking as a keyword and search across all of your notes no matter where you took the notes. As long as it's in a text format in some fashion, you can search from your iPhone or your Android phone. You can do a search when you're on your iPad, and all of the different notes will come up onto the screen, and from there you can begin to assemble, say, a conversation or a presentation or even put chapters of a book together. So the opposite end of it is not only can you write no matter where you are and take notes no matter where you are, but when you want to get back to that information, you can get organized and pull all that information together with very simple searches. And those searches are done on information that resides in the cloud.
Exactly, and you make the point in the book, and rightly so, that even if it's an image or an audio file or whatever, you can tag those assets so they come up in your searches.
That's correct. And as much as I really enjoy sketching, I do a lot of sketching on my iPad and on my actually, I have a new Samsung Note 2, which I really like. Even though I do a lot of sketching on those devices, I find that at the very end I want to tag them, and the tag them with some kind of text that allows me to get back to it. And that's a great way to organize material so that you can get to it later on.
What are some of the coolest and most useful apps that are on your radar screen today?
Well, I happen to be drawn to a lot of the handwriting recognition apps that are out there. And this is really nothing new. It's just that they're getting better. So many people, and I'm included in this, like to take handwritten notes. Let's say you're going to a lecture or you're reading a print book. You like to take some handwritten notes. You don't want to keep using a keyboard. A number of the apps out there now have handwriting recognition. And that really is very handy because you can just write with your stylus or your finger if you have to. And the app will translate your handwriting into text notes. And so that makes it extremely efficient for you to continue just taking some notes and converting them into text, and then that text can actually be searched. And I have a chapter in there about a number of those apps that are actually out there that recognize the handwriting. So I enjoy that a lot, and those are the ones that really have me going, and I enjoy a lot.
The one that I've come across recently that really intrigued me quite a bit was the Dolphin browser for the iPad. I don't know if you've seen that, but you can create gestures within the app to take you to some of your favorite web pages. Like I set it up to watch for my gesture, and I made a large cursive M and associated that with my mind mapping blog. So now all I have to do is do a large cursive M gesture on the screen, and it takes me to my blog.
That's great. Now, I have seen the Dolphin browser, and it's really a great feature to have. the Samsung Note 2, and I believe their Galaxy and line of mobile devices, also allow you to take your cursor and do a gesture across the screen, and it'll take you to your favorite app. So if you want to go to your browser, you do maybe an at sign. If you want to go to your contacts list, you do a big asterisk. You put whatever gesture you want on it, and your app immediately comes up with it. So, yeah, I really like how the direction that the mobile devices are going.
Well, and you talk about using your mobile devices as a portable brain. One of the other areas of great interest to me have been the growing number of brainstorming apps that are out there, and they don't come up with the ideas for you, but they serve sort of like a catalyst to get your brain thinking in fresh directions.
Yes, and I've seen some of them out there. I haven't spent a lot of time with them, but they're great ways to kind of give you a kick in the pants. In fact, I think, isn't it WACTAC that's out there that has a set of flashcards that will kind of get you thinking in different directions?
Yes,
I think we all. Yeah.
Roger Von Eck is the author of that book, A Kick in the Seat of the Pants and a Whack on the Side of the Head, are the two books, and all that's incorporated into this app. And to his credit, he didn't just port the principles from the book in his card deck over to the app. He actually had his developer take it to the next level and incorporate some things into it that are unique to the platform, which
yeah.
I thought was really great.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And so I think it really helps for us to kind of shift gears. Every time I just begin drawing, sketching on my mobile device, it really kind of switches gears for me. I think it's a great way for us to be more creative is by switching from a verbal or textual way of thinking about things into a visual way. You get new thoughts, and it really does help you to brainstorm a lot better.
Absolutely. So getting back to the book Mobile Brain, who would benefit from the tools, techniques, and stories you've assembled there?
Well, I think that the book is really it's geared both for the beginner who just has started with their smartphone or iPad and wants to begin using it more to help them remember more, plan more a little bit. So it really takes some of the basics in getting getting a smartphone or an iPad or Android tablet set up as a mobile brain. It goes through all the steps necessary. There are chapters in what to think about when selecting a smartphone, what apps to get, how to select a cloud service. So a lot of the basics are out there so people can just simply get started with it. It's really not that difficult, and you don't need to be computer savvy. But then I also segue in for veteran mobos, the people that are out there that naturally reach for their phones during conversation. And there's some new techniques and new ways of doing things. And I describe a little bit about snipping and snapping with your phones. And the whole idea of tagging, what I call tagging and bagging, which is where you tag notes and bag them on the cloud. And the whole concept of putting together what I call brain teenies. And brain teenies are kind of this way of condensing a lot of your thoughts from different sources into one map or one set of notes that can focus your energy and focus your attention into a single subject. So from the beginner to the advanced, I provide a lot of different material. And so it's very helpful for, I think it crosses all generations. If you're a student and you're studying for a midterm, it's a great way to assemble your notes and study. Actually, you can study almost anywhere and any time on a mobile device. So it's perfect for the student. And I think for the the boomer generation and the plus 50, you know, there is a growing number of plus 50 age group that are getting really interested and active in their iPads and mobile devices. And this is just another way to plan and brainstorm and enjoy their mobile devices. A lot of times just reading and taking notes on them is a great way of using it. And so, again, there's a lot of how-tos provided in the book. So I think it'd be very useful across all different kinds of age groups.
You mentioned the brain teeny. I just want to briefly bring that up for our listeners here. The whole idea of creating visual maps of talking points ahead of time before you have a meeting, just to help you remember what it is you want to cover, or perhaps you can pull your device out and look at the screen of it while you're having your discussion, or simply to give you a leg up on whatever the discussion topic is, I think is really a smart way to go about this.
Yeah, I think one of the aspects of our devices, this whole visual side of things, is so important because up your device and you have pictures on it, your brain can assimilate that much more quickly just because our brains have so many neurons just dedicated to our visual processing. It's amazing. I think there Eric Kandel in one of his books was describing the whole process and the percentage of the brain devoted to visual processing. I think it's around 30% of our neurons are devoted to that. And so we really have the capacity to visually understand concepts and details and facts a lot more rapidly than we do, say, verbally or through other methods. So it's really a very, very handy way to have a condensed map in front of you that informs you. It gets all your creative juices going, and it recalls a lot of the details and facts from what you've seen or read or heard.
Great. So in closing, where can our listeners follow your work online and specifically learn more about the book?
Well, I would advise them to go to goingmobo.com. That's going and then mobo is MOBO.com. And there's sections in there and articles on there on the MOBO brain. And from there, they can link over to more information about my upcoming book, A MOBO Brain. And if they have any questions or comments, I provide my email and ways to contact me. I'm always open to suggestions and comments.
And the formats that will be published in and its date of publishing is?
It will be coming out both in print, so you can get a full-color book of it ordered through Amazon, and it'll come out in digital format across all the different e-readers and platforms. So you'll see it out there on the iPad and the Kindle format, the EPUB format, and like that. So you should be able to get it in almost any format that you enjoy your reading in.
Okay, and the publication date is?
Publication date is this March 5th, and it's being published through a collaborative press here in San Diego called Bird Rock Press.
Great. I wish you much success with it. I think it's a great book, a lot of great insights, and I urge our readers to pick up a copy of it.
And well, thank you.
Thank you for your time today, Jens. It was very informative.
Thank you very much, Chuck. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise.